Good morning. This end of the first third of winter. My name is Michael McCusker. We have just commemorated Martin Luther King Day, which brings to mind that there are at least two forms of civil disobedience. It might seem a stretch to compare MLK with the occupation by right-wing white militianaries who took over a federal wildlife sanctuary and Native American tribal grounds in eastern Oregon. But I don't think so. Martin Luther King advocated a peaceful revolution of human rights and racial equality against a recalcitrant government that had long denied these most basic prerogatives for people of color. Gandhian, nonviolent civil disobedience was the weapon of choice. The militianaries came into Oregon heavily armed with lethal weapons and seized federal land for what they declare is freedom and justice, but is actually classic vigilante terrorism. They spuriously claim peaceful protest unless challenged. Then they will shoot to kill. MLK was murdered in 1968 by a person whose right-wing proclivities seem identical to the land-grabbing militia insurgent agitators. I wish to read something about the history of right-wing groups in the Pacific Northwest, especially militias, that I wrote for my newspaper in the North Coast Times Eagle, which I have somewhat updated. So this is my opinion, and perhaps my opinion only, in all the wide open and free spaces of all the multiple universes. I call it the propaganda of the deed. And I start with a quote from Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler. Rebellion is a duty when the nation is being led to destruction. And that was Hitler. Out of chaos came the order. Before Malheur, before Oklahoma City, before Weaver and Waco, the order undertook to start the revolution to remake the boisterous, heterogeneous, and perverse America into an early Nazi Germany. Its members regarded themselves as Aryan warriors, dragons of God, and they practiced what they called the propaganda of the deed. They robbed, burned, and murdered until they were killed or captured by agents of the government they aspired to overthrow, which they named ZOG, the Zionist Occupation Government, because, they claimed, it was controlled along with the nation's wealth and commerce by communist Jews. They were, in their own comic book mythology, spearheads of the white revolutionary army, which would eliminate Jews, Negroes, and homosexuals. And their brief, bloody rampage was a definitive, if premature, revelation of a new strategy of domestic violence by the extreme right wing. The order, which considered itself a nativist SS corps, showed what a small group of terrorists can do to a society laid open to their violence. In particular, it raised the specter of a fanatical group armed with a nuclear weapon. As the diverse populations of the world move toward a global civilization, elements in every society resist and clamor violently for separation and for racial, religious, and cultural purification. In country after country, fanatically reactionary individuals and groups have assumed the power that brutality and terrorism bestow. The order dramatically reflected the resurgence of anti-Semitism, racial hatred, and religious fratricide that is troubling most of the world. The ancient and atrocious issue of white supremacy and dominance, the persecution of other races and of religions that are not puritanically Christian, is a perennial theme of American politics. Radical racist and ultra-nationalist groups receive attention far out of proportion to their numbers, primarily as a result of the Oklahoma City bombing on April 19, 1995. It is the far right that now talks of revolution, sets up paramilitary and wilderness survival training camps, and patterns its concepts and plans for white revolt on a fictional account of Aryan revolution, the Turner Diaries, that was written by a disaffected Oregon State University physics teacher. The common thread that unites right-wing hate groups is an extreme hatred for the federal government, according to Klan Watch director Danny Welch. The tightly organized American right wing has abrogated the social contract with wholesale institutionalized civil disobedience, Richard Manning wrote for Harper's Magazine. It might appear contradictory for adherents of the far right to plan the overthrow of a generally conservative and white male-dominated government that it accuses of seizing power from the people. But the election of Barack Obama as America's first black president drastically intensified the vitriolic absolutism of white supremacists. White right-wing militia groups dedicated to overthrowing Zog and perhaps assassinating Obama have sprung up in as many as 47 states since 2008. Members of the radical right see a historic juncture in which their agenda, grounded in a hatred for the federal government and vehement opposition to taxes and gun control, with race as an important but less conspicuous thread, has the potential to resonate with a large portion of the American public, Peter Applebaum wrote for the New York Times. To a degree unusual in the recent history of the radical right, the obsessions of these extremists are overlapping with elements of the nation's mainstream culture. Welch concurred. White supremacists, he said, are heartened by how much mainstream citizens seem to be voicing the same thing. They feel this is their time to make hay. The real danger is the cross-fertilization going on between groups that are not racist and anti-Semitic and those that are, Steve Gardner of the Portland-based Coalition for Human Dignity said. Tom Metzger, neo-Nazi white supremacist and former Grand Dragon of the California branch of the Ku Klux Klan and founder of the White Aryan Resistance, who was fined into virtual bankruptcy for his influence in the murder of a Nigerian national in Portland several years ago, says the government of this country better start listening to the dispossessed white people, the dispossessed majority. Paul Rosen recently wrote for Salon that, as recently as the 1980s, Christian right activists defended racial segregation by claiming that restriction of their ability to discriminate violated their First Amendment right to religious freedom. The rabid right continues to fixate on Waco, the controversial federal assault on the Branch Davidian religious sect near Waco, Texas, on April 19, 1993, that killed more than 80 cult members, which included children. Four agents were also killed, has acted as an anti-government beacon for the extreme right. 2 years to the day of the purported Waco massacre, an expatriate Gulf War veteran, Timothy McVeigh, bombed the Alfred Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City on April 19, 1995, which killed 167, many of them children who were in a daycare center in the building. McVeigh, who was executed for the bombing, claimed the federal building was a strategic military target. That same day, white supremacist Richard Wayne Snell was executed for murder in Arkansas. "Look over your shoulder. Justice is coming," he said before he died. The date of the Oklahoma City bombing has been much discussed for its Waco connection, but it was also the 220th anniversary of the beginning of the American Revolution in 1775, which might also have inspired the bomb heard round the world. Whatever its concerns or intentions, whether Zog or Magog, the vertiginous government so bitterly despised by the radical right would have serious problems mounting either an internal coup d'etat or despotically subverting the persistently edgy citizenry, despite claims of extremists. Although many upper-level public officials openly and often vigorously sympathize with the white supremacists, multitudes of other civil employees of the large pluralistic government apparatus are blacks and Jews, not to mention Hispanics, Asians, women, liberals, homosexuals, left-handers, and assorted other undesirables who are on the far right's menu of removal. Purging all these people, either by coup or revolt, would entail the largest bloodbath since the Civil War and would rival Stalin's massive pogroms of the 1930s and late 1940s. The fanatical fringe has no patience with such subtleties. Its purpose is to cleanse American society in the same manner the Nazis sought to achieve in Germany and much of Europe. White supremacist groups are small and generally scattered, but as Time magazine said as early as 1977, though, quote, the whole Nazi cult is politically impotent, its capacity for stirring hatred and creating violence is high. The order was a volatile collection of impatient individuals from several white supremacy groups who were tired of inactive dogma. They wanted to ignite the race-religious war their peers only talked about, the propaganda of the deed. Terrorism is a function of weakness, frustration, and fervor, Irwin Sewall of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith said of the violent chaos committed by the order. And our friends in the clans, he said, and the neo-Nazi groups were very weak, very frustrated, and very, very fervid. We anticipated the country would take a hit, perhaps several hits. By the time the order was brought to ground in late 1984 with its leader dead and the rest imprisoned or hiding, its Aryan warriors and associated sympathizers from other white supremacist groups had murdered blacks, Jews, and policemen in several states, attacked synagogues and churches, robbed banks and armored cars, and a large supply of cyanide was discovered at one of the order's hideouts, enough to poison a city. The only complaint the far right had about the order was that it started too soon. It might not be altogether surprising that these groups who wish to seize control of the country are thinking of beginning with the Pacific Northwest, a direct contrast to a vision of the region as an ecotopia of political, multicultural, and environmental harmony. Fostered by Richard Butler, founder of the Aryan Nations, which was originally based in Hayden Lake, Idaho, the plan has been to make the Northwest an Aryan homeland. This would roughly encompass an area stretching from the Tehachapi Mountains of Central California north to Homer, Alaska, although Canada might be allowed to keep British Columbia, and from the Pacific Ocean to the Rocky Mountains. The Pacific Northwest is an attractive area for a whites-only civilization for a number of reasons, among them its underdevelopment and relatively sparse and scattered population, which is overwhelmingly white and, with notable exceptions, generally conservative. Eastern Washington and northern Idaho in particular are one of the corners of the nation where the nuts roll, L.J. Davis wrote in a Harper's Magazine story about the order's founder, Robert Matthews, who died in a celebrated shootout with federal agents on Whidbey Island in Puget Sound in December 1984. Here, a tolerance for the more baroque forms of extremist politics is not merely commonplace, it is a hallowed tradition, Davis wrote. The Aryan Nation's founder, Richard Butler, an evangelical minister and former aeronautical engineer, drew up plans and strategies for assuming power in the Northwest, which he and others called the Northwest Imperative. Every species has to have a territorial imperative to survive, Butler told a Daily Astorian reporter in 1986. All we're doing is taking advantage of a natural force. David Duke, former Ku Klux Klan Grand Dragon, and founder of a group he calls the National Association for the Advancement of White People, NAAWP, predicts that by the year 2020, the United States will be a non-white country. When the people become a minority, how are we going to maintain our way of life? We will organize for our own survival, Duke said. He once drew a map of the USA that segregated ethnic groups into various regions, which he gave such names as Minoria, West Israel, New Africa. The idea of an Aryan homeland has triggered a migration to the Pacific Northwest, Tom Reese wrote in the New York Times in late May 1995. Many Americans are aware of militarists in the area, mostly because of the 1992 shootout between federal officials and the family of a white supremacist, Randy Weaver, in Ruby Ridge, Idaho. But now, the organized effort to get hate groups from around the country to settle in the new white bastion is showing results. Reese wrote that a Portland group that monitored hate groups, Coalition for Human Dignity, reported that a steady stream of hardcore racists have resettled to Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Montana. There is considerable local resistance to the white supremacy migration into the Northwest. In 1986, outraged officials and residents of Kootenai County, Idaho, where Butler relocated his Aryan Nations from Southern California in 1978, sent a letter to virtually every county and city government in the states of Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming, about 1,000 in all, requesting they send a message of absolute clarity to the Aryan nations, Ku Klux Klan, neo-Nazis, and other hate groups that their racist, supremacist, and prejudicial beliefs are contrary to those embraced by the people of the Northwest and their governments. The letter asks that cities and counties in the region pass resolutions that uphold the U.S. Constitution, and in particular the 13th Amendment, which prohibits slavery and establishes citizenship, and the 14th Amendment, which ensures that, quote, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, or deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the law. Oregon coastal counties and towns such as Clatsop County, Seaside, and Astoria responded by passing the requested resolution. Cannon Beach took the position that it was not city business, but each commissioner recorded personal opposition to the Aryan nations. Others, like Tillamook County and the city of Warrenton, chose to not discuss the resolution. The Warrenton city manager said at the time, "We do not get into those things." He might have had a point. The resolution was little more than symbolic grasping of a crucifix or wearing garlic to ward off vampires and werewolves. A few of the councils or commissions ignored the resolution, probably because of significant local sympathy for the white homeland idea. At any rate, it was not expected then or now that any of the region's governments would voluntarily relinquish their authority or power. The white supremacists regard local authority with the same contempt they do Zog, and would soon wage holy war and seize the Northwest by force if they ever got the chance. The Northwest is a fertile nursery for savage philosophies and grim visions. The Aryan nations in Idaho received the most attention and, quote, is one of the largest neo-Nazi organizations in America, with chapters in 20 states and ties to the wide array of skinhead, militia, and supremacist groups, Reese wrote in his 1995 New York Times article. The Aryan Nations, its formal name is the Church of Jesus Christ, Aryan Nations, was founded by Butler in the 1940s. It is anti-Jew, anti-Catholic, anti-Black, anti-Hispanic, anti-homosexual, and anti-communist. Its members are trained and urged to commit acts of violence. The Aryan Nations spawned the order, though Butler said his errant archangel, Matthews, struck too soon. A schism between Butler, who died in 2004, and a longtime apostle, Keith Gilbert, launched a breakaway sect, the Restored Church of Jesus Christ Aryan Nations, which was headquartered in Post Falls, Idaho. Its national plan was to kill all blacks. Indigenous to the Northwest is the Posse Comitatus, which was started in Portland in 1969, with the core belief that the highest legal authority is county sheriff. A loosely affiliated organization that opposes income tax and gun control laws and claims Jews control the federal government, the Posse inspired the growth of gun-toting anti-government militias throughout the country. Seven Oregon Posse members occupied the Mikami Brothers potato packing shed in Springfield in 1976 in a land dispute and held off police until they were arrested, which made national news. Also that year, a Posse leader filed a $150 million lawsuit against Oregon Governor Robert Straub, Attorney General Lee Johnson, and five justices of the state Supreme Court, charging them with conspiracy and fraud. Posse members were suspected but never charged with the murder arson plot against Portland judges in 1985. A national comitatus leader was killed in a shootout with police and FBI agents in Arkansas in 1983 after he earlier killed two U.S. Marshals. Perhaps the most notorious standoff by a Posse member was Randy Weavers at Ruby Ridge in northern Idaho in 1992, during which his wife and son were killed. Economic upheaval makes rural Oregon a primary recruiting ground for militias and other hate groups, and also fertile for the Oregon Citizens Alliance, which attempted to electorally target gays and lesbians as non-citizens. Militia organizers have claimed a few hundred members in Marion and Polk counties, and also groups in the central and southern parts of the state. Militia members are also known to be in Portland and a militia in Lane County. The Ku Klux Klan and the American Nazi Party have long had strong influence in the region. The KKK was founded after the Civil War to rob and murder blacks and prevent them from benefiting from their release from slavery. It has had periods of great influence, most notably in the 1920s, when it was nationally powerful, particularly in the South and Northwest. The KKK was especially popular in Oregon during the 1920s. It helped elect a governor in 1922, Walter Pierce, and influenced both houses of the state legislature. Most of the Oregon KKK's wrath was focused on Jews, Catholics, and aliens, primarily Chinese and Japanese immigrants. Homosexuals were deep in the closet and escaped the KKK's attention. There was little activity against blacks because they were fewer in Oregon than furtive and fugitive gays. Oregon is the only state whose constitution banned blacks. The American Nazi Party is a nativist offshoot of the original National Socialist Party that was started in Germany in 1919. It is perhaps the most virulent of the white supremacist groups and openly preaches a domestic sequel to the Holocaust of World War II that eliminated millions of Jews, gypsies, homosexuals, mentally and physically handicapped, and political deviants. American Nazis have committed many acts of violence, including murder. There are also smaller ad hoc groups, locally grown and primarily of youthful nihilistic rebellion, that openly approve of fascist ideology. A Portland example, the New Order Legion, was organized as, quote, the moderate voice of fascism, described as authoritarian rather than totalitarian, opposed to violence and terrorism except in specific instances, yet dedicated to the eradication of non-whites, feminism, abortion, homosexuality, and also of Khazars, a Turkish tribe that allegedly infiltrated European Judaism several centuries ago and whose members, Aryan anti-Semitists say, claim to be Jews. The so-called Khazar theory is formed of the basic scripture of the white supremacy movement, Anglo-Israelism, which is known also as Christian identity and kingdom identity. Anglo-Saxon and kindred people are the true Israel, Tom Robb, national chaplain of the KKK, wrote. Identity breaks the power Jewry has over America, the fear being driven into people's hearts. If you don't bless Jews, God will curse you. Now, we're Israel. We don't have to play patsy with the Jews anymore. Anglo-Israelism is the fantastical claim that God promised Israel would change its name and go west to occupy islands and new nations. And in all the world, L.J. Davis wrote for Harper's, only the Western Europeans, especially the British and the Americans, met these explicit and demanding criteria. The conclusion was inescapable. Europeans and their descendants were God's favorite people in the entire universe, the chosen people. Tom Reese wrote in the New York Times that Christian identity, based on an obscure 19th century doctrine called British Israelism, holds that Anglo-Saxons are the true Jews of the Bible and the modern Jews are the children of Satan. Underneath the surface of this zany concept is the chilling suggestion that the Nazis were the children of Israel and the 6 million Jews they exterminated were imposters. America is entering the Dark Ages, KKK Chaplain Robb said in an interview several years ago. David Duke forecast that the center will not hold. There will be class war between rich and poor, minorities and whites. The CSA Journal, weekly organ of the Covenant, the Sword, the Arm of the Lord, a very far-right group that was inspired by Matthew 10:34, think not that I have come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword, shrieked quite luridly in one edition. There will be economic collapse, riots in the cities, famine and war. It will be so bad that parents will eat their children. Communists will kill white Christians and mutilate them. Witches and satanic Jews will offer people up as sacrifices to their gods, openly and proudly. Blacks will rape and kill white women. Homosexuals will sodomize whoever they can. All but the elect will have the mark of the beast. In another issue, the CSA Journal invited whites Asians and blacks to join together to wipe out Jews. Together we can make the Holocaust a reality and not a Jewish fable. Such are the dreams and worldview of white supremacists. Their meanness and posturing with guns and the violence they commit are palpable signs of underlying dread and mental decline. A slide to savagery is a result of a collusive mindset incapable and unwilling to take the cognitive steps toward understanding their fear. Pain and death are their only philosophical offerings. They worship the rituals of violence and form a primarily male brotherhood of ecclesiastical vengeance. They believe that intimidation, and brutality are the only methods through which anyone will take them seriously. They are frightened, inadequate men, no matter their degree of brutality, who can only hope to impose themselves on their era with hatred and violence because they are not imaginative enough to think of anything else. They believe they are victims of powerful forces they narrowly define without synthesizing the victimization they cause others by their misinterpretation of their discontent. They act like people without history, who display no sympathy with the interconnectedness of races, cultures, and knowledge. They speak of other races as if they were separate species and view life as a perpetual race war that they must win. Though it is necessary to realize that white supremacist ferocity is fueled by fear and deep inferiority, it would be a grave mistake to underestimate their vicious racism and to believe they have any other vision than vengeance. If you are black, Hispanic, Jewish, or even Catholic, or if you are married to or in other ways associated with them, if you are gay, multicultural, physically or mentally handicapped, or if you publicly disagree that the United States is a white Christian nation, or criticize the rabid racism and anti-Semitism that is a cornerstone of that faith, these people mean to do you harm, to kill you or remove you. Who would the neo-brown shirts remove next? Perhaps all persons of intellect and education, as happened in Cambodia. And people who disapproved would not be left alone. The killing fields might soon be our own yards. World civilization felt the horrors of human reversion midway through the last century, the growth of small seeds of hatred and oppression that quickly flowered into the most evil systems in history. Fascism and Nazism began in the dirty alleys and back streets of European cities and emerged from rock-throwing violence to exterminate entire peoples, in particular European Jewry, but also other sorts of undesirables that today's neo-Nazis wish to get rid of. Not long ago in Germany, a neo-Nazi leader said that he and his followers loved Adolf Hitler as devoutly as Christians love Jesus Christ. In the United States, the KKK, the American Nazi Party, the Aryan Nations, various militias, and the rest of the Christian Kingdom identity movement have merged Hitler and Christ into the same deity. An Israeli reporter, Yossi Melman, in describing Palestinian terrorist Abu Nidal as a political fringe figure, perhaps defined as well the situation developing in America when he wrote, "But the fringe is starting to become the center." And this has been Michael McCusker.